This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The past year has been an education for all of us about the ways that political campaigns leverage digital communications to control the information individual voters see and hear. The terms troll factory, bots, have entered the American vocabulary, and we have gained some understanding about how hundreds of workers in St. Petersburg, Russia, were tasked with manipulating Twitter and Facebook messages in the last presidential election. And just yesterday, news broke of the way that a Cambridge University researcher in England improperly gathered personal information of millions of Americans through a Facebook app and then shared that information with Cambridge Analytica, a firm that worked for the Trump campaign in 2016. Last month, University of Cincinnati professor of political science and cybersecurity expert Richard Harknett testified before the Senate Armed Services Subcommittee on Cybersecurity. And he argued that the tactics used by the Russians and others in 2016 were Stone Age versions of what is coming. As America moves towards 2018 midterms, I am joined by Professor Harknett. If you would like to join us, call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter, which seems ironic given what we're talking about. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition, Dr. Harknett.
Thanks so much, Dan.
So you refer to cyberspace as a new seam in the internet, in international politics. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So for a couple of millennia, if you wanted to get at a country's national sources of power, right, its economy, its military, its population, you had to cross a physical border. And so the state, the main role of the state was defending that physical border. And we designated this particular activity, this crossing of borders, as a thing we called war. And we understood what that meant, right? And so we've used this term cyber war, and I've been arguing against using that term for about two decades because it conflates really what's going on here. We live in cyberspace in an interconnected environment. When you're interconnected, it means you're in constant contact with everybody. And what that has done is created, again, as you just pointed out, what I call a seam, right, in international relations in which I can get at your national sources of power without crossing your border, right, in a physical way. Because your economy is tied in this digital space someplace, somewhere to me, both inside your border and outside your border, right? And so what we are finding is that countries are starting to play in this seam, right? They're trying to advance their interests in the general power competition of international relations to advance their economies, to advance their militaries, to advance their position by playing around with national sources of power, right?
And when you say national sources of power, I mean, we're going to focus primarily on the political system and elections and that sort of thing. But just recently, there was, I think within the past week, there has been this sense that maybe the power grid is been – foreign powers have been finding ways to test whether they can get at the power grid.
Right. So so the Trump administration explicitly announced that the power grid had been infiltrated with some malware and that they were sourcing that to Russia. Right. In fact, those that have been studying this for a while know that lots of actors have been in critical infrastructure, mapping these networks, trying to figure out how they work. The question is what are you going to do with that? Right. So if that malware is sitting there in your electric grid, your first question is, you know, are the lights still on? Right. As an electric operator. Right. That's what you're concerned with. But at the national security level, I look at that same malware on that same electric grid, and my first question is not whether the lights are on, but who's going to leverage the fact that they could turn the lights off?
And when.
Right? And when, right? And in a crisis situation, in an economic downturn, can this give other adversaries leverage that they would not otherwise have?
Doesn't this go both ways? There was suggestions a number of years ago that perhaps the United States had found a way to get into the systems in North Korea, and that some of the failures of rockets in over a period of a number of years, that we had some influence on their control systems and that maybe we had penetrated them.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should expect that if, in fact, this is a new seam and we expect the U.S. government to advance U.S. national security interests and protect the country, that it would engage in operations perhaps, right, that would protect the United States against adversaries. So, you know, that is not something the United States has ever suggested that it's done formally.
Officially, right.
Officially, right. But there's press reports, you know, to suggest what you just suggested.
You, in this testimony, recent testimony, you suggested that what we've been looking at that might have happened in the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. Who's behind it and what the connections are, that's the other question. But that's going to look like Stone Age stuff, that there's a new frontier out there. So what is the new frontier and how close is it?
Sure. So, you know, that hearing was specific about the potential Russian meddling and the continuation of Russian influence in the electoral space. And what I was trying to get at there is that if you actually look at what we know about the Russian operations, it wasn't that sophisticated. And so that's what I was trying to get, you know, trying to capture the senator's attention by using that Stone Age phrase, right? They didn't really throw a lot of effort in this in terms of knowing the level of sophistication about the electorate in the United States. What I was alluding to, the next step function, right, is can I get more sophisticated at cueing you as a voter, both intellectually and emotionally, to accept the information that I want to disseminate? So the competition doesn't become the actual information I'm disseminating. The competition is, can I cue you to accept the information I want you to accept? I wasn't talking directly about Cambridge Analytica a month ago because that wasn't something people publicly understood. Right.
Did you know anything about it? Do you have any hint?
Well, so I know those operations are possible.
Okay.
Right. And there was open source reporting that, you know, suggested this is what Cambridge Analytica. So I was familiar with Cambridge Analytica. Let's put it that way. Right. So these reports are not really surprising in terms of what the operations they were involved in. Why this is captioning the imagination, I think, of a lot of folks is because the data was, if you will, exfiltrated from a platform that most Americans know, Facebook, right? So they don't know anything about a psychoanalytical firm in the UK using this data, but they have a sense of what they do on Facebook, what gets captured by Facebook. And so that's the next step function, right? Can I get sophisticated enough where I turn really good marketing and campaigning into behavioral control, right? And what I mean by that is that I can get to know you so well through your digital profile. I know your cues. I know what gets you emotionally motivated, that I can feed you information that you don't think about critically anymore. You just act on. And you act in ways that I want you to act. So in a political campaign, I want you to go out and vote for my candidate, right? That's where the logic of the technology will take us. The question is, do we want the technology to take us there?
Well, that's a question that marketers who aren't interested in politics necessarily, but interested in selling you something, also want to know. You know, one of the things that is kind of interesting is how the First Amendment applies to all of this. Mm-hmm. And just bluntly, do trolls and bots have First Amendment privileges?
Yeah. So I, in my Senate testimony, I submitted that they don't, right? So I think there's a difference between technically manipulated speech and human speech. So if we see something trending on Twitter, for example, what that tells us from a social media context is, well, what it's supposed to tell us, right, is, oh, a lot of people think this is important, right? They may like it, they may dislike it, but they think it's something that people should focus on. And so when we report, when the media reports, hey, this is trending, this is giving us some sense of, in a democratic context, right, that the majority is moving somewhere. Well, what if, in fact, there's only 5 humans involved in that, and there's 10,000 automated accounts that are driving that trend, right?
And that's what we heard the head of Cambridge Analytica talking about in that that secret video that was revealed last night, which was he was saying it's really fun to put it out there, watch it just go all over, and you only have to tweak it a couple of times to get it to go everywhere.
Right. And what he's talking about tweaking, right, is use of this automated
right.
kind of activity. Well, where it gets more sophisticated. So that's one way of doing it, right? And so what I argued at the Senate is one of the things that we have to think about is if I'm then acting on trending, or say, for example, I'm a YouTube site and I'm getting advertising dollars because I have X number of views.
Clicks,
right? So the advertising model that we have right now is based on those clicks. Well, if those clicks are actually being generated by bots, right, automated accounts, am I engaged in fraudulent behavior, right? Because I'm selling to the marketer, hey, I get 1,000 looks, right? I get 1,000 clicks. Mm-hmm. When in fact, it's only like 3 or 4 humans doing the clicking, right? And last time I checked, you know, bots aren't, you know, buying Tide detergent, right? But if I'm P&G and I want to sell Tide, right, I want to know that it's real humans behind that. So I think this is one place where we can start to have that kind of conversation.
Is what's happening right now illegal in the American legal structure?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point, Dan. Right now, what I just described in terms of how you might queue up a voter base isn't illegal, right? It's just using the technology in a very sophisticated way for voter turnout. We haven't had this conversation. So I think the most important thing I hope comes out of, you know, this focus on Cambridge Analytica is this the way we want to run this, right? We're the ones building the technology, right? And so we have a choice about how to build the next version of it, right, and how to use it. So to engage in a public policy context, but the technology is not going to distinguish between good marketing, manipulation, and control. That's how we employ the technology. But I would assume that most of our listeners can differentiate and they say, well, you know, I'm okay with marketing, not too comfortable with manipulation, definitely don't want to be controlled, okay. Right? And so how do we do that in a public policy space is the questions that we need to have our elected officials starting to address.
I want to shift a little bit to a different kind of concern that's out there. It's not exactly what we've been talking about. And that's the question of whether our actual voting systems are secure. And Alex Triantafilo, who is the chair of the Hamilton County Republican Party and a member of the Board of Elections, we ask him sort of his views on this. And let's listen to what he has to say.
Sure.
The elections here in Hamilton County are very secure, and I'm proud to say that we work on a bipartisan basis to assure a fair and secure election in Hamilton County. We can assure people of that for several reasons. First of all, very little of what we do is done online, and we have a paper backup system at the polling locations that assures, you know, our ability to double check what the election results are that are fed into the machines. And there's no interconnectivity between the ballot counting and our database that's done over the internet. So we've left ourselves I think in a good position to avoid any kind of cyber attack.
You know, I've covered election night for the last 33 years, and that's two things there. One, paper ballots, and two, their counting system is not connected to the internet. Only when they, after they've counted, they report out through the internet. So what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I haven't looked at the system, you know, in a forensic standpoint, but those two, disconnects with, a fully integrated, interconnected space actually are providing some security, mm-hmm. right? To equate this at the critical infrastructure level, during the Russian-Ukrainian conflict, Russia used an attack on the Ukrainian electric grid. That the Ukrainians were able to actually restore the electric grid rather quickly is because it was so antiquated, right? So the digital attack actually didn't go at it. So I'm not suggesting Hamilton County's electoral vote counting system is antiquated, but it actually, there's something to paper, right, and being disconnected. That creates a little less efficiency, but sometimes less efficiency is more secure. So that strikes me as the right, direction. What does that mean, though? It probably costs a little bit more. But we should pay for that and to make sure that our elections are not in doubt, right?
I want to – and that question of not in doubt, I want to just – we also talked to Caleb Fox, who's with the Democratic Party and a member of the Board of Elections. There's four members of the board, two Democrats, two Republicans. Caleb and Alex are both on that board. And he had a point that I think is worth bringing in here given what you just said.
After every election – one of the things that we do routinely, in fact, we're required to do so by the Secretary of State, is to do an audit. And so what we do is sort of what you would do in a recount. We randomly select precincts, and we hand count the paper ballots from those precincts to verify that the paper ballots are the same as what the tallying equipment came up with. So there's no way of knowing in advance which precincts are going to be the ones that are checked after that election. But every time that we've done that, we've found that our counts match. But I think that's an important piece of the security is going back and doing that check after the fact.
Does that indicate to you that at least at the moment we're on pretty solid ground?
Yeah, auditing is a great practice, right? And again, you need to – this is all about the electorate's confidence in our institutions to deliver a fair and accurate account. So those are types of practices that we absolutely have to continue.
Okay. We have a caller, and I'd like to bring Doc on the air here. He has a question about some of what we were talking about before we got onto that specific question of votes. Doc, what would you like to ask?
Yes, my question is, it's my assumption, or I heard at least, that a person or a group could, like, say, create an online account or do some type of hacking from one location, like, say, from one country, but make it seem like it's coming from another country. Could you speak on that, please?
Thank you for your question.
Yeah, Doc, that's a fairly straightforward technical manipulation. I can bounce my location globally across all servers. So, in fact, I could be sitting here in Cincinnati, want to affect things here in Cincinnati. You wouldn't know that I'm sitting in Cincinnati.
So, consequently, could what we're looking at in terms of the last election have originated someplace other than Russia, or could Russia in the future make it look like it originated someplace else?
Sure. So what we call this in cybersecurity literature is the attribution problem, right? Can we attribute accurately the source of these attacks? We're getting better at attribution, but those that want to hide attribution also keep innovating. So this is actually a back and forth grappling kind of situation. We're trying to stay or trying to play catch up to those that are trying to hide.
So the question really comes down to, in my mind, what do we do? What is the right approach of this from this moment forward, given the experience and what we've learned over the last 14, 16 months, where do we go from here?
So I think we could start at the beginning, right, which was that we never built this system, the original internet, to do everything we're asking it to do. Right, it was not built with that intent.
Yes,
right?
But
so now we are. You fast forward a couple of decades, a couple of things that we need to do. So I think we need to look at the issue of technically manipulated speech, right, and suggest. I think that's a firm area where we could, and so that's going to limit marketing, right? That's a cap on marketing. But can we say that we're not going to accord bots First Amendment rights?
Okay, so that gets back to that question.
Yeah, so that gets out of that speech. The second is that we have to go to these social media platforms and say, you need to recognize the impact that you have on sociopolitical economic affairs, right? And that you are, in fact, going to be manipulated in the current way that we are structuring this. And so let's work together. I'm not a big fan of huge government, you know, regulation in this area, but there needs to be alignment, right, with these social media platforms towards advancing democratic goals, right?
Could that happen because Facebook is taking a beating on the markets right
well,
now?
Well, I think that's the case, right, that there's some market contention. But say, for example, the British government right now is looking at setting up some safety standards and then saying, look, if you get breached and we then look forensically at what you did and you didn't meet those standards, we will put on some fines, some significant fines, 17 million pound levels of fines, right? Will that then make you shift your business practices, right? So there are some levers that government has. But ultimately, what we have to ask we have to decide what these platforms are, right? Because we already have in place laws to manage media. So with political campaigning, there are particular ways that you have to process ads, right? Right now, Facebook is not subject to that. I think that has to be a serious conversation about this, right? If you want to make the other argument that it's a public utility, which some people make, well, then there's a whole regulatory environment there. But right now, what we've done is said it's neither, when in fact it's both, right? And so what we have to actually do is adjust our legal structures to recognize that they were built pre-digital age, and we need to bring them into the 21st century. I'd like to do that and see that in concert with the technologists and the technology platforms so that their iterations actually are in line with where we want to go. And then the final piece of this is you and I, right? So as citizens, we have to start to ask ourselves, you know, where do we want to start to draw some lines for this technology? How do we want this technology to work? What are we comfortable with and what we are not comfortable with? And to date, we've sort of been running on autopilot, right? We really like the convenience of these things, and they're customized down to us. The only reason they're customized is because we're giving everything away to them, right? All of our personal data. They've monetized that data without sort of any sense of regulation. And that's what hopefully comes out of these revelations.
I have a concern that, and I think there's two ways of looking at what's happened over the last year and a quarter. And one is that because we've plunged into looking at what happened in 2016, we have learned a lot of details about, I mean, something like what came out yesterday, Analytica. But also, on the other hand, because it's gotten wrapped up in the Trump administration resisting feeling they're being charged with something, that there's been a stonewalling and we haven't taken care of any of the issues that are actually there and we've lost time. What's your view about where we – how we've spent the last 16 months?
Yeah, no, I think you just summarized it fairly well, Dan, right? And we have to recognize that this is not This is not a political problem from 2016. There are things to be investigating. Let that investigation go. But there are, from a U.S. national security standpoint, there are adversaries out there that are playing within this seam. One of the seams is our polarization and partisanship, right? And so what we saw, again, just very early stages of this, was an adversary who could play with our partisanship, right? Intensify that partisanship. And so the question is we've been very good over our history to rally around the flag, right? So where is the civic culture component to this? Ultimately, democracy functions at that level, right? We have to see some greater public good, greater benefit of, hey, we'll tussle between Republican, Democrat, and all the other parties, right? We'll play out our ideas. But in the end, we have faith in the institutions that we are empowering through our vote.
And we have to protect them.
And we have to protect them.
Well, I want to thank you for all the work you've done for decades to get us to this point. And I'd sure like to have you back because this is a continuing story. So thank you for being here today. I want to thank UC professor and cybersecurity expert Richard Hartnett for joining us today. Thanks for listening to this broadcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.